The blacklist wants to find Red Scare communist investigations by the U.S. government in the 1950s. Now an HBO documentary is redefining that term. HBO's The Blacklist is a documentary with 22 prominent black Americans, from General Colin Powell to erotica writer Zane, having their say. Here are some voices from the film.
I learned that you can stand up for what you believe in and that people will come to respect that even if they don't agree with you.
I think I've been true to my roots as far as what kind of guitar playing that it is that I do.
It's a lot more than just hitting the ball as hard as you can. It's all about strategy and moving your opponent and just really figuring them out. Like, I never get credit for mental.
I was studying to be an engineer and, you know, I'm going to drop out to become a stand-up comedian.
And as we were leaving the church, I said to my father, "Hey, Daddy, I'm going to be a lawyer like Thurgood Marshall."
Those were the personal reflections of former Planned Parenthood President Faye Waddleton, rock guitarist Slash, tennis star Serena Williams, comedian Keenan Ivory Wayans, and attorney Vernon Jordan. HBO's The Blacklist is the brainchild of director Timothy Greenfield Sanders and journalist Elvis Mitchell. I started off by asking Elvis Mitchell about the title.
As an African-American, you know this, right, that you hate that phrase and you hate anything because so much of black culture is about reclaiming the negative. And I just thought, well, it's the 21st century. Why not come up with a blacklist that people want to be on? And we a blacklist that celebrates that part of that word in it anyway. Because it just feels ridiculous to me that at this point still having a black mark or being called black-hearted or any of that kind of stuff is still considered to be, you know, derogatory. So why not use this as a way to sort of restart the conversation?
It seems to me that we're in a period of overall reevaluation of blackness, both whether or not and how it's subversive and whether or not and how it's powerful, because it's the year of Obama, some people say. Did that intersect at all? Did the political side intersect at all with your thinking about the timing of this project?
You know, we were before all of that, and maybe we can ride or see the zeitgeist, but this started 2.5, 3 years ago. Barack wasn't even running. There was no talk of that. So I think we just felt it was the right project to do, and for us it was interesting. You know, we lucked out enormously. Here we are with the ultimate project at the perfect time.
Both of you use a pretty austere aesthetic in this, both visually and in terms of how the interviews were edited to excise the questions. Visually and verbally, why did you choose to do this the way that you did?
Well, for me, you see so many of these documentaries, there's a cut to, you know, the black guy in the tweed jacket wearing glasses and nodding sagely. And I don't own a tweed jacket. So for that reason alone, I couldn't be in it. But also, I just thought that I'm immaterial to it, that these are the stories of the subjects, not mine. We didn't need an audience surrogate. The people are talking to the audience. So why not just let them talk and tell those stories?
Some of the people you spoke to include Sean Combs, Richard Parsons, former Planned Parenthood President Faye Waddleton, Thelma Golden. How did you choose your subjects between you?
It was very much about not the usual suspects. We wanted a very diverse group of people. We didn't want just the obvious talent in African-American community of sort of musicians and sports figures. I mean, those are the easiest people to go to. So we wanted, you know, Faye Waddleton, who could talk about an extraordinary life and her experience, and Malin Duckett, who was an original a Negro League player, and that was very important to us.
When Zane came up, my sisters went, "Ooh, y'all got Zane?"
Zane, for those who don't know, is what would you call her, an erotica writer? Incredibly, she's crossed over now into doing...
an extremely popular erotica writer who started off writing stuff on AOL and had her website shut down on AOL.
And tells that story in your doc. Well, let's talk about one of the people who some may be a bit surprised shows up at all, Slash, guitarist of Guns N' Roses.
Slash is in the movie? I need to see this.
Now, he talks about coming from a tradition of funk and R&B music, but here he is talking about One in a Million, a Guns N' Roses song that has some racial insensitivity, according to some folks. Let's take a listen.
As far as being black and, you know, being in Guns N' Roses, I think the only time there was a realization in the ethnic difference between myself and, say, Axl was when we put out this song called One in a Million that he wrote. the lyrics in it were, I can't even remember. It was just immigrants and faggots and police. And that was the first time that I was like, you know, I don't really feel comfortable with you making these statements. Suddenly, the fact that I was black became very apparent to people on the street. You know, a lot of black dudes would come up and go, why did you allow that to happen? So they all knew. I didn't really ever think about who thought where I was from that much.
Elvis, what did you like about, I mean, Slash is someone who, you know, this was the first time that I saw a picture of him with his mom, who's African-American. And I certainly remember when I found out Slash was black, biracial, whatever. You don't even actually ask him what he considers himself, but he talks about having deep connections with his African-American family. Why did you choose him for this project?
I knew from the outset that Slash is in this, and he was going to be the first person, because if it's not the usual suspects, if we don't want to feel like, and forgive me for saying this here at public radio, public television, if it's not going to be like a PBS documentary that runs in February during Black History Month and during the pledge drive, you want to send a shout across the bow that says this is different. And when you think about black music, we don't tend to have any history. So people think, oh, it's got to be hip-hop. And people forget that we invented rock and roll. So why not have somebody who's still a practicing avatar with an enormous sphere of influence who's biracial? People, friends of mine, who are lifelong Guns N' Roses fans had no idea. And that's the one that, because for me, if you look at this film, I want people to be the equivalent of walking into a room and saying, wait, there's Slash, and there's Zane, and there's Dick Parsons, and there's Toni Morrison, and there's Colin Powell. What do these people have in common? And so what it is, as far as I'm concerned, it's the African-American experience in the 21st century, and that contains multitudes.
What about his interview surprised you, if anything?
Slash's interview?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think he was extremely open. I mean, Elvis really has a way to get people comfortable, and I think that was the magic of this film, is that, you know, we combine kind of my portrait technique with Elvis's charm and his encyclopedic knowledge. So we sat there with Slash, and I think you see a side of him that you don't really ever see, and an openness and a kind of warmth. And even though he's wearing sunglasses the whole time, it's still he's still, you can feel him.
You having this as a project, there recently, of course, was the big CNN Black in America series. And, like, why the hilarity? Come on, spit it out.
Because, come on, girl. Now, don't make me do this on public radio. You know, we used to be ghettoized. Usually this kind of thing ran in February. And with somebody saying, well, you know, we haven't answered any questions here today. But because, and it's thrilling because we now have a serious contender for the office of president. This can now run in some month other than February, but still have the same kind of, well, I guess we haven't solved any problems here today, or this issue is still here with us. I didn't want to do a film that was about black victimhood, that was about black people not being able to get through a competently managed day, because that's what you'd think if you look at documentaries, or you look at Black in America. It's still this kind of, you know, wringing of hands and furrowing of brows. And why not make a film that's unsentimental about people having pleasure in their success?
Well, that's a great note to end on. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you so much. It's really a pleasure to be here.
Thank you.
We've been talking with director Timothy Greenfield Sanders and journalist Elvis Mitchell. They're the masterminds behind the film The Blacklist, and they joined us at our studios at NPR West. HBO's The Blacklist airs on Monday, August 25th. That is News and Notes. Nicole Childers and Christabel Nsiabwadi produce the show. Sasha Woodruff edits, and Kenya Young is our director. Our technical director is Shireen Strausberg. Marcia Caldwell is our drive engineer. Our staff includes Tony Cox, Roy Hurst, Jeffrey Bennett, Jeffrey Gardner, Devin Robbins, Anthea Raymond, and Zachary Slobig. News and Notes was created by NPR News and the African American Public Radio Consortium. It's going to be a big, big show, from partying to punditry. Next week, we'll have all the news from the Democratic National Convention. I'm Farai Chidea. This is News and Notes.